Go Cats.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We're renaming the show. It's not going to be the Jeff Sessions Show, I can tell you that. Though I wish him well. Indeed.com is probably where you ought to post your resume. Dave, what is the new name of this show?
I believe it is the Nathan Taphorn Show.
The Nathan Taphorn Show. Last night, where everybody just said, well, pop some more popcorn, Martha. Looks like overtime to me. What did Nathan Taphorn do at Northwestern's delightful gym?
Took the ball out of bounds with 1.7 seconds to go and then threw a perfect pass the length of the floor
for the
to his teammate Derek Pardon, who laid it up at the buzzer and scored.
I wonder what it sounded like.
1.7 to go in a tie game.
I guess he can't run it.
Taphorn heaves it down the floor.
Got it.
Pardon the catch. Puts it up.
Yes!
Good! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Derek Pardon! At the buzzer for the win! And the Wildcats have beat Michigan 67-65.
Are we going to get trampled?
They're all in a pile right in front of us. Unbelievable.
I like how Coach Joey's mostly concerned about his safety at that
point.
Well,
so was I, believe me.
Run!
There was... I did think our table was going to get knocked over there for a moment. And, because you had all the players ran all the way across the floor... And they tackled Derek Pardon, who had scored, right in front of us. And then everybody piled on. And then the student sections emptied.
Yeah.
And on one end is the football team. They're all coming out and jumping on all these
kids. I love
kids.
How Derek Pardon was running towards you guys. I'm like, where is he going?
That's the tradition. They jump into Dave's arms. the significance of this for people that haven't been following along with the bids for March Madness coming out a week from Sunday is?
Is that this should sew it up for Northwestern.
Yeah,
I mean, you never say it's a lock, but it is a lock. If there's ever a lock, this is a lock.
There are certain things that happen, 10 wins in conference,
mm-hmm.
Those are things that just make you go, okay, they're in, when the people go through and they make their placements. Now, we don't know where they're going to play or who they're going to play, but for the first time ever.
First time ever. And this was such a great game because Michigan is kind of in the same situation. They've been very hot lately. They've been playing really well. They're a good team. And the atmosphere in that place last night was just unbelievable.
It's been hot forever, right? All season long. But I consider this such a gift for Dave Ennett. This is like a lifetime achievement award.
It is.
Because the crap on wood that you've seen mm-hmm. for a generation. Mm-hmm. And now, bad basketball aside, these were good kids doing their best, but there was never this kind of consistent talent, and I couldn't be more excited, mostly because they're such good people at Northwestern.
Yeah, they are.
The administration, starting with Jim all the way down, they're just good, quality people. These are kids that go to school to go to school. You don't get into Northwestern because you can play basketball. You get into Northwestern because you studied. You get into Northwestern because you earned your way in. Mm-hmm. And if you can play basketball, that's great. So it makes it doubly hard to compete with schools that go, I know you're having trouble with math. Wink, wink, we've got someone. Northwestern doesn't do that. So the fact of the matter is they earn this, they deserve it, but this is your lifetime achievement award. If we could boil this down into a statue, if we could put it in an envelope backstage, not handled by PricewaterhouseCoopers, this is such a great thing for you. So I hope you just giggled all the way home last
night. It was a lot of fun. But I will tell you, the thing that struck me was the faces of these players when they were all jumping on each other, jumping up and down on the floor, just absolute, pure, unbridled joy.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to see that. And sometimes we get a little bit cynical about what happens in big-time college sports. And
sure.
I'll tell you, both these teams played their guts out last night. It was just a great night of college
basketball.
It was a great
night. You know, when I was popping back, I listened to almost the entire first half, and then I got you in my ear. I got the game on. I'm going back and forth to the Hawks. Hawks, by the way, huge win over Pittsburgh. Blow them away with an empty netter late. So a great night in sports. But I'm going back and forth, you know, multitasking, making my ADD worse than ever. And I got you in my ear. And every time, you know, and the Big Ten Network guys are fine, but they're not deep in it. So I turned them down so I can hear you. And there's a slight delay. And look, the whole thing was perfect. perfectly bizarre and chaotic and excellent.
It was.
So congratulations.
Unbelievable.
I think that's the word. So this is the Nathan Taphorn Show. I'm Steve. And I just want that kid to get credit for that pass, because that pass was it, man. That shot's not going in, and Michigan gets the ball back if it doesn't.
Well, and the thing that was pointed out after the game was that when they lost to Notre Dame back in November in Brooklyn, he was inbounding the ball and turned it over, and Notre Dame came back and won that game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So this is – and he said after the game, this has been on his mind all season.
Wow.
So
– wow, redemption. What a great,
I think so.
Yeah, that's tremendous. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a top six at six, a quick top six at six, because so much of this stuff is going to be covered through the rest of the show, including the major political story of the day. Let's go.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGNS.
The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, the number one lawman in the land, the most honorable citizen in America, appears to have lied under oath to the Senate. We will take this up in great detail in politics in the next hour. He doesn't even have a good excuse. The Dow went over 21,000 for the first time yesterday. The Dow loves the Trump administration because the Dow bets on the future, and regulations going away would be good for business. Hopefully that will last for a while, but we'll get into that in politics as well. CNN says the White House lied about President Trump's path to citizenship desires going into the speech on Tuesday night to Congress, so to change the news cycle and get better headlines. Wait a second. Hold on. Whoa. Are they engaging in fake news? Are they actually writing fake news? CNN did the right thing and came out and outed him yesterday. Antarctica hit 63.5 degrees yesterday, which means all the penguins quit. Oprah says she may run for president someday because you don't need experience. And it's the 10th anniversary of the Kim Kardashian sex tape. Doesn't it seem like they've been around longer than that? Seems like the Kardashians have been around for 100 years.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochran Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, dear Julio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking.
I think we'll change the nickname, the next name to Nathan Taphorn as well. You cool with that?
I need to know. I didn't hear you.
I said I think we'll change your name to Nathan Taphorn as well. This is the Nathan Taphorn Show.
Sure.
Nathan Taphorn, a good movie name? It'd be a great character name in a movie.
It would be.
Yeah.
So Nathan Taphorn, Mr. Full Court Pass for the Northwestern win last night. And as we
amazing.
Said, who imagined the Hawks beating Pittsburgh would be the second story, right? But the.
By the way, Dave, great call, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
Just a great call.
Thanks, yeah. Nick. And I wanted to jump in on the Beanie and Cecil conversation this morning. But I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't know it. I didn't know.
Well, let's share with the rest of the audience that was maybe didn't hear
it.
Beanie and Cecil was what?
Well, Beanie and Cecil.
Beanie and Cecil was.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, it was back when I was a kid. It was a cartoon.
Uh huh.
You know, you remember Beanie and Cecil?
I really don't.
I don't either, Steve.
The C6 sea serpent, right?
Yeah.
And and so at the end of the, and you were talking about the fact that it was a something Bob Clampett production.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so at the end.
That's the one I remember of all the Clampett.
At the end. Okay. They would have one of the characters would actually pop up there and say, this has been a Bob Clampett production. I remember that from when I was a kid.
Very,
you guys were talking about
very
that.
Very weird what sticks
I
to your brain.
That,
not
Dave.
Your brain, but everybody.
You remember that, Mary?
I do.
The only Bobby Clampett I remember played golf.
Yeah. That's loved Beanie and Cecil.
It's a different generation.
You kiss.
Stop.
It's so cute that you two are still. So cute that you two are still active at this.
How do I remember it? How do I remember it? Steve doesn't. You're older than me, Steve.
I was busy watching the Flintstones.
Because Steve was in New York. Not that that mattered. But.
Well, Beanie and Cecil wasn't a local show.
It was a network show.
It was network.
No, it was network. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Well, you didn't watch it.
And they were Beavis and Butthead's parents, Beanie and Cecil?
Yes, they were.
And now that show I liked.
All right, just quickly before we go any further, and I want to put this whole Oscars thing to bed because, I'm frankly tired of talking about it. Mm-hmm. But the two PricewaterhouseCooper, Frizzinghuis and Farfik-Nugent accountants.
Yeah.
They have both been suspended from the Oscars for life. I don't know if that means they can't watch it at home. I don't know if that means their cable goes out. But they will not be able to be backstage at the Oscars. And the stage manager who has worked the Oscars for a long time, the guy backstage running the show, was the guy out front with Jimmy Kimmel, getting Jimmy Kimmel seated next to Matt Damon, getting Matt Damon's wife to a safe, comfortable spot backstage. When he hears in his earpiece, I think they read the wrong name. He then rushes on stage. He tries to literally shove the accountants on stage to correct the error and has to physically drag them out with him. Mm-hmm. And by then, it's a minute and a half later, four acceptance speeches have gone on for La La Land when the bald stooge, who Sandberg wants to marry, grabs the card, rips it from poor Warren Beatty's hand, makes Warren Beatty look even more ridiculous. Uh-huh. And it wasn't Warren Beatty's fault. And then the bald stooge proceeds to take charge and try to fix things.
How can you say he's a stooge?
He was a jerk to the old man.
Who
I don't like
cares?
People that are mean to old people.
Because it was a commotion. No one was taking charge.
No, well, people were trying to figure it out. I agree with that. Here's what you do. You turn to Mr. Beatty and you go, let me just grab this for a minute. You don't snatch it out of his hand like it's on fire. Yeah,
Beatty just told them that they won and he was wrong. So I would not.
Plus, Beatty threw Faye Dunaway really under that bus.
No,
under
he
the
didn't.
Oscar bus.
No, no, because if I were up there with you, I would have held the envelope up to you like, okay, look, there's no wrong name. Hello, wrong name. And I wouldn't expect you to go, La La Land.
And then how Jordan, after he was so. He was upset, but so sincere.
Jordan
happy.
Is the bald stooge?
Jordan Horowitz,
yes.
Yeah. He's probably happy about the Cats win last night since he's a Northwestern alumni. He was like, I want to give this to my friend. You made a beautiful movie. It was like the most
that part was okay.
It was like a peaceful transition of power.
Yeah, and he said he was proud to give it to him. I don't know. I think he's just...
By the way, if he'd been at Northwestern last night in the middle of that pass from the great Nathan Taphorn, he would have intercepted it in midair and tried to shoot himself.
No.
So anyway, the Oscars is over, Nick. I don't know if you heard.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's go to the movies for the weekend. What's Logan?
Logan is the final in the Wolverine film series. And it every single review that I've heard is phenomenal. It's not your average superhero movie. It's actually more like a very contemplative, very, very, very violent Western. And in fact, the director who co-wrote it said that he was inspired by both Unforgiven and Shane, and that's how they're handling the Wolverine character in this. And in fact, the reason, you know, the fact that it's named after the guy's real name instead of Wolverine indicates how different this is. It takes place in the future, and Logan, who is Wolverine, taking care of an ailing Professor X, played by Patrick Stewart. And he's on the Mexico border just trying to stay, just being unassuming. And a little girl is discovered that she's a young mutant who is connected to Logan, and they have to protect her from these bad forces.
It's the old story. The old story of the little girl mutant.
Yeah, well, it's also the old story of the Western with the kid who's fascinated by the... Yeah. By the lone hero, I think it looks great. James Mangold directed it.
Well, what's the buzz? Because I have heard it's great, and I have heard there's a gut wrenching ending to it.
Yeah, no, I mean everything I've heard is phenomenal, and it's actually closer to being a classic Western than a superhero movie.
Well, that's cool.
And I'm all over that. I'm all over that. So
no doubt about it. Nathan Taphorn and I are going on Friday if you want to go.
Yeah, right. Hey,
okay.
Nick, Table 19, I'm so torn because I love Anna Kendrick. I love Lisa Kudrow, but this doesn't look so hot. What are you thinking?
Well, it's got terrible buzz, and it was supposed to come out a year and a half ago, so that's, you know, not a good sign. It's about a girl played by Anna Kendrick who was supposed to be the maid of honor at this wedding, of her best friend's wedding, and then the best man at the wedding dumps her via text, but she still goes to the wedding, but they sit her at the table with the losers in the back of the room. And it's about the reception and what happens at the reception with all these weird people at this table 19. I too like Lisa Kudrow and I love Anna Kendrick. Stephen Merchant is in this movie. A lot of Craig Robinson. There's a lot of really talented people in this movie. I saw the trailer for the first time I saw this trailer was a year ago. So just kind of been sitting around since then. And
they're trying to goose it by doing it as a double feature with Heat and then possibly adding the Eagles documentary as well. Would that make you go see it?
Yeah, I'd be first in line.
And what is before?
If there were Jim Jones Kool-Aid served, I would go.
What is Before I Fall?
Before I Fall is a like based, I guess, on a very popular teen kind of novel about a teenage girl. Let's see if you've heard this plot before, Steve.
Okay.
It's about a teenage girl who, in the month of February, begins reliving the same day over and over again.
What?
I don't know. You ever hear that? Have you ever heard that?
That plot? Is fantastic. That would be a great vehicle for Bill Murray.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's played seriously, and she dies in a car accident at the end of that day, and then repeats the day over and over and over again, trying to fix what happened. So I don't know. I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, well, that's Groundhog Day. Thanks.
Right. Seen it more than once.
Yeah. Much more than once.
And this Tuesday at the Movie Co., it surprises me, and I suppose it shouldn't, how many people have never seen this movie. Well, here's your opportunity. Reservoir Dogs, yeah. Tuesday with Nick.
Reservoir Dogs. And you want to feel old, 25 years old. So we're going to show it on the big screen. The tickets are going pretty good, so you might want to get into Fandango.com. Only $10. Parking is free. And the movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it, and we'll talk about it afterwards. It's a great movie. And it's the movie that really broke Tarantino. I mean, he became a rock star after that movie, and it still holds up. It's just great. And by the way, I do want to mention very quickly, the number one movie last week at the box office was Jordan Peele's horror movie, Get Out. And I want to tell you right now, one of the best movies I've seen all year, and it works on every single level. And if you see it with a loud, excited crowd, because during the last 20 minutes, people go nuts during this movie. It is a terrific film.
Yeah, I'm going to see it this weekend.
It's so good. Make sure, Steve, try to see it with as big a crowd as possible. Because like the last 20 minutes of this movie, the theater that I saw it in, people were going nuts. And it's funny, it's scary, it's smart, it makes incredible racial and social commentary. It is a home run for a first-time writer-director, Jordan Peele from Key & Peele.
Yeah, he of Key & Peele, definitely the bigger engine behind the operation. But those two guys are geniuses and deserve every shot they get to make whatever they want to make.
I totally agree with you, and it's just a great movie. And as a horror fan, of which obviously I am, it's an incredible example of the genre. Just a great, great movie.
You've been banned from the Oscars as well. I just received word. Apparently, your previous work with PricewaterhouseCoopers. I don't know what that's about. Make a call. Nathan Taphorn and I will pick you up at 5.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
6:43 in Chicago, live on Michigan Avenue in the greatest studio in the world. It's the Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue. And we'll see what the Dow does today. Over 21,000 for the first time yesterday. Unless you know what you're doing, your long-term plays seem to be better, which has been covered on the opening bell in the noon business hour again and again and again, and with our money folks. But that's not the nuttiest news of the day. I'm torn. The nuttiest news of the day is either Antarctica hitting 63.5 degrees and there being a blizzard warning in the mountains of Hawaii on the same day, or the Attorney General of the United States lying under oath. Those seem to be big. We'll get them both as we continue. Standing by is Kevin Magnuson, president of Special Olympics Chicago. He is Keith Magnuson's son, and the polar plunge is Sunday morning. Are you ready, by the way?
I am ready, yeah. I just decided yesterday, so I'm mentally ready, and I'm getting some great donations, too, so I'm very excited.
Dax Shepard's coming in to be the celebrity plunger. Is his delightful and lovely wife coming with him?
Kristen Bell? Yeah. I believe she is, yeah. Okay. I think Kristen Bell is going to be with him.
Urlacher's going to be at the plunge grilling brats with Johnsonville at some point. I'm sure he'll get thrown in the water.
Mm-hmm.
People trying to throw Urlacher in the water? No, I'm not going. But Kevin Magnuson joins us now. You know, I was a fan of your dad, and I had a chance to meet him on several times, and we may have even hit a golf ball once or twice. And he was a terrific guy. I didn't know him well enough, as I wish he would, but I hope you understand the impact he continues to have on Chicago and Blackhawk fans as I welcome you to the show, Kevin.
Oh, thanks, Steve. That means a lot. He was an unbelievable dad, and I was so lucky to have him in my life for 27 years, and obviously miss him every day. I was at the Blackhawks game last night, and it's just such an honor to see the team playing so well and look up in the rafters and my dad's numbers up there. And
it's got to be great.
It's just a really special thing.
How'd you get involved with Special Olympics?
So From my dad. He was involved very heavily during his playing days and definitely after his playing days. And when he would come home from a day with the Special Olympians, he would just have a huge smile on his face. Right. And my sister and I took note of that. And when he passed away in 2003, Special Children's Charities and Special Olympics Chicago approached me to join the board. And I've been on the board ever since. And I'm in the middle of a two-year stint as their president, which is a huge honor.
Kevin, your dad reminded me of Ernie Banks and Ron Santo in the sense that everybody had a Keith Magnuson story. He was one of the first people I interviewed when I was an intern at a now-defunct TV station, and my fellow interns and I just thought he was the coolest person. Do you hear that a lot, everybody always saying, hey, I remember your dad, I met him, you know, at XYZ or just over here, and he was signing autographs and talking. He was just a down-to-earth great guy.
I do hear that a lot, and it really never gets old, and I appreciate those kind words as well, Andrea. Just really felt honored to wear the Blackhawk jersey, and coming from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan to the big city, made every day count and gave back in so many ways and just loved the people of Chicago. So I love hearing those stories, and any listeners out there that have stories, if you see me, I'd love to hear them. I appreciate it.
Well, that's cool of you to say that, and I can tell just from talking to you, you've got that from your dad too, because like Santo, like Ernie, and like Maggie, never met a fan you didn't like. Always an open ear to whatever the fan wanted to say, even if it was not so good.
Exactly. Well, you know, kind of a running joke with my dad. I mean, he got in a lot of fights throughout his career, and, unfortunately, he didn't win a ton of them, but it was all about his effort, and he never backed down to anyone, and that's something, you know, I'm very proud of, and I know he was very proud of, and fans like to remind him of those fights that he didn't win, but everyone loved the effort, and, the way he'd run, fly around on the ice during the games and try and hit everything that moved.
And imagine his hair always looked great too, which of course I've always been bitter about.
it is true. He always looked good.
Any advice? Sorry, Kevin. Yes. Any advice, Kevin, for Andrea? Because this is her first plunge.
Take a deep breath and enjoy the 45 seconds of relative pain, and it'll be over soon. Oh. That's all I can say. But it's, like you said, 59 degrees on Sunday. We're anticipating another huge year. We're on track to have over 6,000 plungers and we're currently at $950,000 raised. So we're trying to, climb above a million and keep going.
You have to feel good. We were talking about this yesterday, and I said I was going to do it. I put it up on my Facebook and got about $300 in donations in just a few hours. So it's for fantastic cause.
Well, explain, how do people donate to your Facebook?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's not right. Not donate to your Facebook. Donate to the cause through Facebook.
Go to SpecialOlympics.org, and then you can just search. There's a link right there to Polar Plunge. You could sponsor a team. There's a lot of great teams. You could sponsor an individual. Mine is just Andrea Darlis, WGN. Or you can just make a general donation to Special Olympics.
But you'd prefer if they picked
you.
Well,
yeah. Just try to raise some money, yeah.
Yeah. For people that are coming on Sunday or still on the fence about coming, sell it one more time for us and tell them why they ought to join you.
Sure. So registration is open online, like Andrea said. It's sochicago.org, and they can register online through tomorrow night, Friday night. Ends at midnight, and then they can also come on site on Sunday. And, each year the plunge has just grown bigger and bigger with the different celebrities we've had, from Jimmy Fallon and Vince Vaughn. Lady Gaga has been there twice. The great people at Chicago Fire and Chicago PD. Obviously, Mayor Rahm Emanuel really kicked that off when he challenged Jimmy Fallon 3 years ago now. So it's not only a really fun day to be a part of, it is our most important day and our biggest fundraiser. And the money goes to help fund the year-round activities and transportation and medals and uniforms for our 6,800 athletes here in Chicago.
Always good to hear about Special Olympics, and nice to finally meet you, at least over the phone. I hope I get a chance to shake your hand. But thanks for what you're doing every day.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks, Andrea.
Really appreciate it. See you out there.
Sunday.
SOchicago.org.
Yeah, /polar plunge. Just click right there.
And pick Andrea for your donation because, you should.
Thank you, Steve. Moved in with a cousin. The cousin committed suicide. Left him with nothing but ruined pride. Something new inside a boy saying, Alex, you gotta fend for yourself. He started retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf. There would have been nothing left to do for someone. Andre had a pretty good day yesterday. She got to hang out with a bunch of Chicago school kids. She got to see the hottest show, Hamilton, and get fired up about it. What was the background of this story?
This is the education program that Broadway in Chicago is co-hosting with,
and good for them,
Chicago
the
Public Schools. 28 Chicago Public Schools, Steve.
Throughout. Well, I just want to say something about Broadway in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do this.
No.
There's no shortage of people that want to buy tickets for Hamilton, and there's no shortage of time that the Hamilton players as a group wouldn't mind having off and to themselves.
Right.
So the fact that the school system and Broadway in Chicago and the Hamilton cast, crew, and production folks have partnered for this, good for all of them.
It was such a wonderful program. They're doing at least three of these. And again, huge props to the cast of Hamilton. And, of course, Robert McCormick Foundation. There's a bunch of other partners involved with this. But there's 28 schools. We saw 12 yesterday. And many are, you know, in very tough areas in the city of Chicago, sure, where the kids maybe otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to do this. But it's a day-long event. There's one more next Wednesday. And they let the students go to the theater, packed house, by the way, and they get to go on stage for about a couple hours and perform their own poetry and spoken word and rap.
Little freelancing.
Yeah, a little free rhyming. And then some of the other students take the scenes right out of Hamilton, and they kind of recreate the
Very
scenes
cool.
as well.
So you talked to a bunch of the kids?
Yeah, we talked to kids from Bogan, and there was two kids that you would just have loved from Roberto Clemente, Deliana and Jaden, and they were like a drum core, so they were kind of like doing a fife and drum, but rapping to it.
Did it remind you a lot of working with me?
It did, yeah, quite a bit of you as a young boy. But it was just a really cool event. The kids were so excited.
Yeah,
I mean, over the
right?
top. Yeah, and it was so neat to see. You know, you go to the theater and you see a play and you see something like Hamilton, and most of the audience is kind of quiet. These kids knew the words to the songs. They were whooping it up. They were having, and then of course the scene where, you know, there's a risque scene between Alexander Hamilton and Eliza, and they're hugging, and he's kind of grabbing her, and the kids are going, ooh,
you get you some Hamilton.
Right. But just a wonderful program. And afterwards we got to talk to some of the kids, and they were really overcome with emotion.
Well, it's nice.
At just how great of a day it was for them. So it was it's called the Hamilton Education Program. So it was great.
Now, the two PricewaterhouseCoopers accountants that were in the wings, were they kicked out prior to the show?
They weren't even allowed in.
I understand.
And we actually put a really nice video together of the event with the kids. Collins, one of our webcasters.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have that up probably by tomorrow.
Okay, great. Let us know where.
Sounds good.
Let's do the Express. When the Hawks win, we love to beat it to death. And let's do it right now and let you hear how they beat Pittsburgh. Sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
Chicago!
Chicago Blackhawks take on the defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins tonight in the first game after the trade deadline. Kane away on a 2-on-1 break over the pen line down the left wing. Shoots, he scores! Patrick Kane puts the Blackhawks on top, 1-0. Roosevelt paws the puck to center ice, but here's Wilson down the right wing side. Hawks zone, backhand shot. Hit the crossbar, ricochets out, or did it? They may review it.
I think that went in. Yeah, it is a goal.
Here's Panic down the slot. Shoots, he scores! Oh, what an outstanding play by Richard Panic! He threw the puck into his own skates and kicked it back to his stick in front and snapped it into the top left corner past Fleury. With 23 seconds left in the second, the Hawks lead again, this time 2-1. Put it over to Kane with a shot. He scores! His second goal of the night, and a beautiful handoff by Schmaltz from the left circle on the backhand. Hits Kane in full stride into the right circle, and he buries it past Fleury. With 3:08 left in the third, it's 3-1 Hawks. Kane hustling to get to the loose puck right corner. Shoots, he scores! Another hat trick for Patrick Kane. A backhander, no less, from about a foot above the goal line in the right wing corner. Just an amazing athlete is Patrick Kane. That's his third on the night, his 27th on the season. A hat trick into an empty net, and this will put this one away. 4-1 Hawks with 40 seconds left in the game. 3 seconds, 2, 1. The Hawks have won 5 in a row and 10 of their last 11 games.
How about that run?
Huh? You don't want to be Pittsburgh. You don't want to be Washington. You don't want to be anybody in the West. You don't want to be anybody in the NHL with the Hawks on your schedule. They're hot. Boy, how much money is Scott Darling going to make as an unrestricted free agent? We got to figure out a way to keep him here. Let's start a GoFundMe Indiegogo page right now.
Well, there ought to be a hometown discount, right? This Lamont guy.
I just wish we had the GM on this morning to talk to him.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Oh, you think wait a second. Him? Here on the Nathan Taphorn Show later on this morning, we will have Stan Bowman from your Chicago Blackhawks.
If people are hearing that, just joining and wondering what?
Nathan Taphorn.
Who is this?
Mr. Full Court Pass. You reminded me a lot of my half court shot, except he was good. Adam Hoge coming up.
Very similar.
Adam Hoge, we're going to talk about the Combine and play Stump the Hoger, his least favorite game show. Got Hawks tickets later, and of course, it's Thursday, so Edelstein and Brady, attorneys at law, will be here to talk politics and try to explain how Jeff Sessions, an attorney, could have lied under oath in his confirmation hearings. Just the stupid knows no bounds. Minute before 7 at 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Barrett Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
Adam Hall ready? Adam Hall ready? Is it Hoge or Hoagie? Is it like a sandwich? What do we know? I'm hungry. Adam Hoge standing by, ready to talk Combine. I assume you're in Indianapolis?
I am, Steve. Good morning.
Morning to you. I have limited interest in the Combine, but I have great interest in playing another exciting round of Stump the Hoger. So okay. I know this is your favorite game. And we're going to get a listener on. And the listener's job is just going to be to pick the categories for you. I like the listener's chances of winning anyway, no matter how you do in the contest. But I will give you categories to pick for Adam when we play the game. But let's start with your job. You're at the Combine. How much fun is it watching grown men run 40s?
Well, luckily, they don't even let us do that, so I don't have to worry about it. It's the NFL. They let fans in there, but they don't let the media.
Is that right?
Yeah. It is. I don't know. It's all on TV. The main stuff yesterday was just that we got to talk to Ryan Pace and John Fox and actually have some conversation about the Bears. So
I don't remember talking to the Hoagie.
I think.
So what did Pace and Hoge say? What did Pace say first?
Yeah, well, Pace was definitely the more interesting conversation, as you could probably imagine. But I think the big thing there was just that this whole thing with Alshon Jeffrey, they were definitely never going to give him the franchise tag for the second straight year, which would have meant they were paying him $17.5 million, which would have made him the highest paid wide receiver for 2017.
And it would have killed Dan Hampton. It would have it would have put him down.
Yeah, and it's completely understandable because Alshon Jeffrey does not deserve that much money. So he's going to go to the open market here. It's going to be really interesting to see because, I was just already looking at some rankings of free agents, and a lot of people think he's the top free agent of any position available right now, which is pretty crazy considering he can't even play a full season.
That's amazing. That says more about the class than it does who he is, right?
Yes, it does. But, each individual class kind of has its own market. And I think the concern there is that, that means someone's going to overpay for him probably. And I think Ryan Pace has been pretty stubborn about sticking to his number here. And, you add all that together, and I would say a pretty decent chance a week from now that Alshon Jeffrey is being introduced in a different city with a different uniform.
Well, he's trying to get that Super Bowl prediction to the lineup for him. Mm-hmm. We continue on the Nathan Taphorn Show. You're, of course, I'm sure, Adam, are a big Nathan Taphorn fan as well.
Well, after that pass last night, I think he's already on the Bears' depth chart at quarterback.
Well, he should be. You got a great gun, and I've renamed the show the Nathan Taphorn Show this morning. Dave's got a question for you. Then we're going to play Stump the Hoge. Number to call is 312-981-7200. You can call now, Dave.
Well, what about quarterback now, Adam? Because I think he used the term fluid which is sort of, I don't know, how would you describe that word in this context? It sort of leaves open any possibility with Jay Cutler.
Yeah, it's a good word to use when you're trying to avoid, you know, saying things. But in the case of yesterday, he used the word fluid 10 times in 18 minutes. And I think it was the accurate word to use. And I wrote about this on WGNRadio.com last night. I mean, you look at this quarter, it's not just the Bears. The quarterback situation across the NFL right now is 100% fluid. It's very unpredictable. There's so many questions out right now from, will the 49ers trade for Kirk Cousins? And if not, would they want Jay Cutler? Because Kyle Shanahan, their new head coach, has a history with Cutler. Also has a history of Brian Hoyer, who's still in the mix for the Bears, that people kind of forget about at this point.
I forgot so one.
All these dominoes that kind of, you know, stack up, they could go in any different direction. And I think that that's why right now as it stands, I don't think Ryan Pace knows what's going to happen. All he can do is be prepared for every different scenario. And the one thing he did say yesterday that stood out for me is that he feels really confident in free agency because that's his background. You know, the NFL draft wasn't really his background. It was more pro personnel. So, you know, he kind of has his rules that he sticks to in free agency, and this is all going to shake out. But right now, Jay Cutler is the only quarterback under contract for the Bears.
Yeah, I got to say something. You know, Hogue, you come in here and you tell me Adam Pace doesn't know what's going on. I'm telling you right now, that's my move. I'm the one that doesn't know what's going on. So you tell your friend there, Pace, whatever the hell his name is, Ryan Pace, Adam Pace, Bob Pace, you tell him I'm the one that doesn't know what's going on.
Well, no kidding.
All right, are you ready? You ready to play Stump the Hogue?
Yeah, I feel really confident today, guys.
Tammy is on the phone. Good morning, Tammy. How are you?
I am fine.
Thank you for listening.
This is for the Hawks tickets, correct?
We need Adam Hogue to call back. Lock that line in. We need Adam Hogue to call back so we can play. Adam Hogue has a little boy, and the little boy, I believe, is now two, right?
He's two and a half, three, almost.
Okay, and so one of the categories, and in the interest of time, we're going to start playing Stump the Hogue without Hogue. One of the categories is actually about kids, because I thought that would make it fair. So here are your three categories, Tammy. You just pick one of the categories. We will ask the question. The categories are sports, which you would think Adam would know a lot about. Money, which we know he doesn't know a lot about because I know how much he makes. And Dr. Seuss, which you know he knows a lot about because he's got a little boy. So which category are you choosing? Sports, money, or Dr. Seuss?
Sports, money. We'll go with sports.
You're going to go with sports?
Yes.
All right. Is the Hoger back with us? H.R. Hogenstein? That's not a book, by the way. All right. So the category, Adam, is sports. Are you ready to play?
Yeah, this is going to be even more embarrassing now, isn't it? Okay.
Welcome to Stump the Hogue, America's favorite game show, and a game show that Adam Hogue hoped as a friend of his I would forget we ever played the first time. But no such luck. So let's go to question number one. The question is sports, and remember, if you don't know, you can ask for help from Dave or Andrea. Or Mary, for that matter, but Mary doesn't like the show. All right, so here's your question. What four universities both produced a U.S. president and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback? There are four universities that produced a U.S. president and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Stump the Hogue. Hello?
Need a little help here.
No, I'm not asking you. I'm asking the Hoger.
Oh, okay.
All you got to do is sit back and relax and enjoy your winnings.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know how the game isn't easily understood. Yeah. The rules are so clear. Four universities that had a Super Bowl winning quarterback and a president graduate from them. Anybody?
I know one.
I know one, I think.
Okay, go ahead, Hoke.
Michigan
is correct. Michigan is correct, as a matter of fact. Tom Brady and Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, the great Patriots quarterback.
Is Illinois one?
Illinois is not one.
There you go, Tammy. That'll help.
A lot of universities. Pick a university, Hoke.
Stanford
is correct. John Elway and Herbert Hoover, mostly known for his punting. You're halfway there. Third university. You're out of time. The other two would be Navy with Roger Staubach and Jimmy Carter, and Miami of Ohio with the criminal Ben Roethlisberger and Benjamin Harrison. I don't know how you couldn't get those, to be honest with you. Tammy.
I thought Benjamin Harrison went to Ohio U.
He did, but he transferred.
Okay.
Tammy, two remaining categories here, money and Dr. Seuss. And remember, Adam knows a lot about Dr. Seuss, but, you know, the money thing could be good, too.
I'm going with money.
Going to go with money. Here's your question, Hoger. What is the United States bullion...
Wait, ask him.
Almost didn't get through it.
What
is the United States Bullion Depository known as? What's its more common name?
No idea.
Would you like help?
Yes.
Andre or Dave?
I got it.
Dave, so he's not mad at me.
He Googled it.
No, I didn't.
Calm down, Dave. He's waving his arms
around.
Pat
Brady,
like,
have I even touched my computer?
Why don't we go ahead
Fort Knox.
Okay, well, now you Googled it while I was defending myself.
Fort Knox is correct.
What does it have to do with a bullion?
Oh, it's not an actual bull. A bullion is not a kind of bull.
Well, I thought it was a soup related.
And it's not soup, and it's not an actual bull.
Dave, there was purple pen at me.
Gee.
All right, Tammy. So here we go now, Tammy. We're going to Dr. Seuss, the final category. I will name a Dr. Seuss book or not. You simply tell me, is this a Dr. Seuss book or isn't it? Are you ready to play, Adam?
Yes.
All right, we're going to stump the hook. First, a sample question. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
Yes.
Yes, of course that's a Dr. Seuss book. The Sneetches.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I gave you the wrong hand signal. The Sneetches is a Dr. Seuss book. All right, so this is the big one. You got to get this. I'm really pulling for you.
Okay.
This is a sequel. The Cat in the Hat finally buys a pair of pants. Is that a Dr. Seuss book or not?
Not.
You also could have gone with Ride My Bike, Fly My Kite, But Don't Touch My Stuff. That's another little-known Dr. Seuss book. Congratulations, Tammy. I have no idea what the final score is, but I know you've won Stump the Hogue.
Yay.
Yeah. And Adam, thank you for two things. One, for being the person that has to deal with the Bears nonsense, and two, for the fine work you're doing. Hoag hung up on me. You know what happened?
He's had it with this
one's
game.
One's on hold, everybody else is on hold. Stump the Hoag. I'm booking it for the weekend.
What does she win?
I don't know. It's none of your business.
Oh.
No, it's right here. Appreciate you reminding me, actually. For playing Stump the Hoag, America's most poorly organized game by me. She gets a ChevyDriveChicago.com WGN radio stainless steel travel mug, a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, an Apt gift card, good for things at Apt, oddly enough, and Lou Malnati's pizza. Congratulations, Tammy, and thanks for listening. We're back with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein on a very bizarre political warning. Tickets for the Islanders and the Blackhawks tomorrow night. Be the first to correctly answer, where is the puck hidden now? Or the Hawker Riddle. Are you ready? I was Pop Morris Roadhouse in 1907. My prohibition drinks were speakeasy heaven. Then they changed my name to a primary shade, a booth for Capone and a jazz club of jade. That may be his best ever. That's really good.
I think I know it.
Can you do it again?
I was Pop Morris Roadhouse in 1907. My prohibition drinks were speakeasy heaven. Then they changed my name to a primary shade, a booth for Capone and a jazz club of jade. First correct answer. Nice job by John DeCoss, riddle writer. Boy, you talk about a bad job to have. Riddle writer. Not a lot of big money openings in the riddle writing game. 312-981-7200 is the number as I welcome in Pat Brady, who is currently employed by himself where?
Next Generation Strategies.
You like your chances for continued employment there?
Yeah, I got a great review this year.
Excellent. Eric Edelstein's here, and where do you work, Eric?
I work at AL Media.
Now, you have partners in that venture, right?
Unfortunately, I do.
You don't like your chances as much, I guess?
None, less chance.
Yeah. Last night, the major...
Do you have an HR department?
You're looking at it. Okay, good.
The major news, I don't even know why good would be the answer to that. Later on, you're going to hear more on this, I'm sure, down the road. But shockingly, Oprah saying she may run for president is not the big story today. Oprah said you can run for president because you don't need experience and have floated it out that she could be available in 2020. Whether or not Donald Trump serves 4 years is certainly in the balance as this continues. And the 36 hours of good feeling off his speech Monday night appear to be over because Jeff Sessions, his controversial attorney general pick, apparently lied under oath. Now, let me just run a timeline through for people on this as quickly as possible here. This has nothing, let's be clear on something. This has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. Nothing. She's wandering in the woods. She can't, she's, you know, the citizenship thing, path to citizenship. She has no path to the presidency. Hillary Clinton will not be the president of the United States. Please take that off your table, everybody.
But Chelsea might. There's still a chance.
This is specifically about a foreign nation hacking into the United States elections. That's it. You can't sit around and have it. This is the new land invasion. This is cyber invasion. This is what Putin and company are doing in Germany. This is what they're doing in France. This is what they're trying to do all over. So we know at the bare minimum that the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI all said that Russians hacked into the election as early as late last summer and early fall. We know that President Obama and his people got that information to the people involved and tried to tamp it down quietly so as, quote, not to interfere with the election. We also know later on that Obama in a press conference said, when I saw Putin, I told him, knock it off. Singularly, one of the weakest responses anybody could say about it. Embarrassingly weak. Having said that, he leaves office after knock it off, and President Trump comes in. And President Trump, after trashing these intelligence agencies, and technically there's 16 or 17 of them who have all said the same thing about Russia, he coordinated what they were doing with Nazi Germany. Now, I can tell you this. The fine people who don't get enough credit for what they do or don't get paid enough for what they do to protect the rest of us, they're human beings, too, and they're political one way or the other. But here's what they're not going to do. They're not going to be called members of Nazi Germany or behaving like they were, and they're not going to be a part of a cover-up. So for anybody who wants to jump on the leak bandwagon here, God bless leaks, because I don't care who is sitting in Trump's chair. You cannot have this. This is what brings us to Jeff Sessions. Now, you guys correct me if I'm wrong on this. I believe when you're nominated from a cabinet position, there's a long questionnaire you have to fill out, along with tons of interviews with various parties involved before the Senate confirmation hearings. In other words, you have multiple opportunities to say, I need some clarification on this question so I can give you the right answer. Is that the way it works?
That's my understanding, yep.
So Jeff Sessions had multiple opportunities to say, now, about this Russian question, do you mean when I was senator or do you mean in the context of working for the campaign? And he didn't do it. So how does he get out of this?
He doesn't, likely. But from a Republican perspective, I'm glad to see leadership like Kevin McCarthy this morning and Senator McCain last night not getting in a process argument, arguing over a special prosecutor. They both have said that Jeff Sessions needs to recuse himself as Attorney General from this investigation, which is done all the time, and probably the proper thing to do now is appoint a select committee and let's get to the bottom of this. But we get resistance from that because the more control you give up to the standing committee, you get a lot of resistance. But my hope is that we don't get involved in the process, get him out of it, investigate it, and find out what happened. And if he did, he should be prosecuted, or he should certainly resign, or whatever the result of the investigation is.
By the way, I should also say that all of the intelligence agencies have said that the ambassador from Russia that he spoke to is the same person, by the way, that took down Michael Flynn because of that contact, is Russia's number one spy in this country.
Yeah, I mean, I think the larger question is, do we need a select committee and a recusal from the attorney general to look into his potential perjury to Congress, or do we need it for the broader inquiry on Russian interference in the American election? Now, what we do know is the Russians tried to interfere. What we haven't proven, and I still believe that innocent until proven guilty, is that the Trump campaign colluded with them in trying to affect the election. We do not know that.
No, we don't.
We need
absolutely
to know
don't
that.
Know
we need to know that.
That's
and
right.
So
you need to get to the answer. The president ought to be leading the charge on that.
That's right. And so one of the concerns is you've got Richard Burr, who's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, who was a huge Donald Trump backer. At one point during the campaign, he said, there's no distance between me and Donald Trump, who's leading the Senate investigation into these leaks. I just think to restore integrity, and look, I take no glee in this as a partisan. I don't want to see the attorney general resign or to show that Russia and Trump
colluded in this election, but we need to know the truth. And I think we're not going to get to it until there is an independent investigation or some recusal, some select committee bipartisan.
Burr, Chaffetz, out. Get out. Burr and Chaffetz both got to go. They both got to step aside. Chaffetz, no good on the House either. And the lack of leadership from McConnell on this and the silence from Paul Ryan, who, while I admit he's in a terrible political position, is deafening. If Sessions himself doesn't man up and step up today and say, because of the concerns about this, I do recuse myself from this as a first step, then who are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
He did say something not that strong. He needs to say that he's going to recuse himself. But I agree with Eric. It needs to be an independent investigation. The risk, though, with a special prosecutor versus a select committee, and this happens on both sides, they go nuts. They spend tens of millions of dollars. It gets way off track, and we have a four-year investigation, the Starr investigation.
And again, I don't know what the process should be. I just know the process we have right now is not going to get to the bottom of it. The other thing that's remarkable, Steve, in this moment of alternative facts is in the Washington Post report on this, the Sessions spokesperson said, well, he did meet with the ambassador, but in his role as a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. So the Washington Post, amazing, there's still good reporters in this country, called the other 26 members, Senate offices of the Senate Armed Services Committee. 20 of them got back to them, including Senator McCain, and they said none of them had contact with the Russian ambassador in 2016.
Whoops.
And this guy was a spy anyway.
Had nothing to do with their job as committee members of the Armed Services Committee. 20 members.
Well, he was at the convention, right? Our convention?
He was. He was great. Apparently,
was there?
I was
drinking vodka with him. It was a blast.
Yeah, you didn't know at the time. It's at least go with that story that you didn't know at the time. At 7:34, I'll leave you with this question before we go to the big story in just a second here, and that is this. The man who is the number one lawman in the country, the Attorney General of the United States, if he says he didn't understand the question, how competent is he to do the job? It's 7:34, back with a big story next. Make it 7:35 on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I didn't have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment.
I'd listen. I know the lamps broke. I know I was the only one in the room. I know no one else was in the room. I don't know how the lamp was broken. How do you get out of that? If you're a lawyer at that point, you just go, Jeff, I can't help you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ABC News report is you have to Clinton-esquely, if that's a word, parse and say, well, the question related to as a Trump surrogate. I mean, I agree with you, but I'm saying.
But that would be the real test of loyalty to political BS because everybody that supports Trump doesn't want that.
Yeah, and the minute you lawyer up, we lose.
No, no, no.
It's a country.
I agree with you.
Don't lawyer if you didn't get out.
Yeah, but I agree with you. That's the only play to get out of it is to say, well, I didn't understand.
That's bad for Republicans. It's bad for the country if you got caught, admit up and get out before you do more damage because we do not need a three-year investigation.
Yeah, it's hard to see him surviving this, the more pile-on from Republican legislators there are. And this is just going to become a distraction for the
White
House.
But you do. Listen, everybody knows how I feel about Trump. The worst thing that could happen in the next 4 years is that we impeach a president. Impeaching a president takes down an economy. It stops everything in its tracks. It's terrible for the country. But why, I pay my taxes, why shouldn't all of us sit here today, whether you support Trump or not, and expect the president of the United States to stand up and say, I am sick of the Russian question, and I want a full investigation to get to the bottom of this? We've never heard that.
No.
Ever.
And I don't think you will, not from this president.
Okay. Why?
Well, you might, because I think he's slow to the mark on a lot of things, like he was with the Jewish cemeteries, and he finally got around to making a statement on all the anti-Semitism that's happened since his election or gone on since his election. He just doesn't react quickly enough. I agree. He should immediately say we need a full investigation, select committee, whatever, and start it today and get this question over with and get it off the table, because now we're involved in a huge process argument about what we're going to do, if anything, and it just distracts. But maybe he wants a distraction right now. I don't know.
I mean, I hope you're right, Pat. The problem is that they're coming out fighting, which is their instinct, is blaming Obama, blaming Democrats, saying this is a partisan witch hunt. This is somehow because Obama lost the election on his favorite candidate.
It's the media's fault.
They're spreading this stuff around.
Well, I mean, today, though, with Kevin McCarthy making that statement, that's pretty strong, but very high up, saying we need to get to the bottom of this and you need to get out of it, meaning Attorney General Sessions.
Question is, who would you rather be today, Sean Spicer at the White House briefing or those two accountants from the Academy Awards who just lost their jobs?
I think the briefing may get rained out. I think they may do two briefings tomorrow.
Doubleheader tomorrow.
Could be a problem.
Doubleheader
there.
On Saturday.
Do you guys anticipate, will we see something like we did with Flynn, where he asks him to resign or he turns in his resignation? Or
yes.
Is that way you think that'll happen?
You know, things happen, as you said, these things brew so fast now that the half-life of these things just takes on monumental proportions immediately with social media and press. And, you know, I think by the end of the weekend, you could have that kind of situation.
We've been asking the same question for months and months and months. Why won't he release his taxes? Why won't he talk about Russia? He just creates more suspicion where if there isn't any, prove it.
Right.
This is not guilty until you're proven innocent. This is the president of the United States doing the right thing and standing up and saying, I'm tired of people assuming that I've got Russian dancers in the private quarters at the White House, and we're all sharing Pat Brady's vodka.
Well, he should have put it in his it's good, too. He should have put it in his speech that we, like you said, will not tolerate interference in our elections, nor will we with France or England or anywhere else.
France and Germany. Right
Germany,
now.
Excuse me. That should be the leadership role the president takes, and it takes it off the table. But I agree, he won't, for some reason, won't do it. Maybe there's nothing there. But he creates more issues than he needs.
He creates more issues because, you know what, Steve? It's not that he won't talk about Russia. He talks about it too much in defending it and then blaming other people. It's like the old, you know, you protest too much. There must be something there.
There was a point yesterday or the day before, because we're getting into traffic here, but where a question came up, and I've got to find a specific question, but his answer was, I haven't talked to Russia in 10 years. I haven't called Russia in 10 years. You called him a month and a half ago from your office. He's such a terrible liar. He should contact any 13-year-old boy in America and go, how do you lie? Because I suck at it.
Do they think it's not going to come out, though? I mean, do they really believe,
idea.
I'm going to lie and then this is
maybe
not going to come
maybe
out.
There's nothing there. But he's creating the impression that there is something there.
He is under higher standards than the rest
Absolutely.
Of us. This is not guilty until proven innocent. This is the president of the United States. Prove that you're not in bed with Vladimir Putin.
Now, there's a different standard when we have a Republican.
It's a bad than literally, Steve.
It's a different standard when we have a Republican than a Democrat. You got to remember that. The Republican presence, I think, on these issues, Bill Clinton got away with a lot in the 90s that he didn't answer to.
We can't go backwards. Listen,
I'm not saying go backwards, but let's be realistic about it. The Republicans, I think, get held to a different standard on this.
Well, maybe
they create it by the standards, the stands they take. But I agree, he's got to clear this up.
Yeah, it's all that matters now is the orange guy doing the right thing.
You know, give him credit. It's not as orange as it used to be.
You know, I should.
Andre, what do you think? Looks good.
He did get a haircut. They did
listen,
tone it down
listen,
a little
the
bit.
Guy's got hair. I'm just bitter.
He changed his color.
It's time now for traffic. Here's Mary.
And he did change his color. Looks a little bit darker.
And I can tell you, speaking for myself, I own nothing in Russia. I have no loans in Russia. I don't have any deals in Russia. President Putin called me up very nicely to congratulate me on the win of the election. He then called me up extremely nicely to congratulate me on the inauguration, which was terrific.
It's terrific. He's winning.
Putin must be a nice guy.
As a Republican, conservative Republican, to hear the President of the United States talk about that way about a former KGB agent who's killed a lot of people and done a lot of damage in this world and is not a nice guy and wants the old Soviet Union back, that's a scary clip you just played.
Well, it's the same as playing the clip, right, from the Super Bowl day with Bill O'Reilly. A lot of killers. I mean, we can start grading killers. I mean, sure, some people kill better than others, but, you know, we kill too.
Yeah, we're not innocent.
Unbelievable. We expect there to be further opportunities for Jeff Sessions to step to a mic on this today. At the bare minimum, a recusal of it is probably being discussed quite heatedly now. How big a role does Steve Bannon play in this, or do we even know?
I don't think anybody knows.
What do you think?
I think Trump's a CEO who will fire people immediately if they're making his company look bad. So I kind of agree if this thing picks up, if you get more leadership saying.
Took a while in Flynn.
It did take a while in Flynn, but he's a slow learner, but he does kind of learn. Like, I think that's what you saw from the speech. He dressed up nicely and acted like a president, and it worked. I think if this thing gets too ugly, he'll ask him to resign.
The question is, does Sessions, as an inside knife fighter, try to stand up and salvage it? Does he try to do the press conference where he comes clean and just fights back and tries to put it to bed and, you know, says to Trump, I'm going to go do this, give me a chance to try to save the day?
But honestly, logically, between all of us, what could his play be? Based on what's on tape, based on what we know.
No, he just uses that squeaky voice that people can't really understand what he's saying.
Hang on. Listen, somebody translate that. We got to take another day on this.
Yeah.
Well, let's look. And I know we don't want to look back, but let's look back at what some other people do. Clinton didn't come out and admit it until they actually had the dress. So these things can go until you get the real smoking gun. You don't. And Nixon didn't go until the.
Are you saying Sessions wore a dress when he met with the Russian ambassador?
We don't know that specifically.
I was in Cleveland. It might have. It was a weird event. So it might have,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, what happens in for a while too?
What happens in Cleveland stays in Cleveland.
Exactly.
I think it could actually help Trump's image and his approval ratings if he did get out in front of it and ask Sessions to resign by the end of the week. And
absolutely could.
Here.
Yeah.
No. When actually show some leadership and do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's my last thing for this, and we got to run anyway, but. My concern is he's appointed, by almost all accounts, a great national security team, from defense to Homeland Security to McMaster taking over the NSA. These are men who have risked their lives and sacrificed for their families to fight guys like Putin and to protect America. They will not be part of a cover-up. How long are they going to be around an administration if this Russian question lingers and they continue to be blocked in doing the right thing? Because if those three guys go, then I got real concerns about all of us.
I agree.
Yeah, no, I think to the extent those guys are aware of anything, they won't tolerate it. The question becomes, if this stuff happened in the past, how aware are those guys going to be of it? So, you know, you try to isolate them. But I agree with you, Steve. McMaster's was a home run for Trump, and he cannot afford to lose that guy.
Did you see, though, what Trump's doing now, giving more power to the Pentagon to make decisions on these special operations? So it appears he's pushing a lot of power down to these folks, which, I mean, you can argue both sides of that. Is that good or bad? But the more power they have and more control they have, the less likely they are to run on some stupidity coming out of the White House.
Good news. We're out of time to discuss the state budget. Any news before Friday on that, do you think?
I think, listen, they're close to a deal down there. And I know there was some big headlines today, but the reality is they are very close. And that Governor Rauner has told the people in the Senate, we will not take a deal unless it's good for the taxpayers. And some of the things that the Democrats wanted to do in that last deal, there's too much tax hikes without enough reform, not enough parity. But I'm not critical on either side. I think they're going to get a deal, and I think both sides deserve a lot of credit.
Days, weeks?
It's got to be days if they're going to get the grand bargain. But then we go to the House, which Speaker Madigan will then control the process.
It would be great if Madigan called now and go, I've got time right now. Guess what? The news wouldn't get on.
But the point is, I think on both sides, and the governor's, and I know there's some bad headlines today, but the governor and both Senator Cullerton saying we got to continue to negotiate, which is a good sign. That's politics.
Good to see you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thank you, as always. And Eric, I'll call you later and leave your voicemail where I just go Madigan, 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 Madigan.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah,
it's 8:12. Sorry, getting over a little funk here. You know me, though, I'll never really get over the funk. And Dean Richards joins me now.
He got the funk.
You know, I've heard,
gotta
buddy.
Gotta have that funk.
I love when you go street. I've heard, and I believe this is true, because you know me, I don't make stuff up. But I've heard that the two accounts from PricewaterhouseCoopers have now been banned for life from the Oscars and kicked out of the country. Is that accurate?
That is correct, and we're going to build a wall around the Pricewaterhouse office.
That seems right. Now, don't let them out. They'll account for something.
In the Los Angeles area. It's these the two who are responsible for the Oscars, who are, you know, supposed to oversee the Oscars. They had one job to do. Make sure that the correct envelope got into the correct hand at the correct moment. Instead, this guy, Brian Cullinan, he seems to be the culprit with this.
Yes, absolutely.
Was busy tweeting pictures, taking pictures of Emily, Emma Stone, you know, and hobnobbing with the stars backstage just minutes before this big brouhaha.
After he was told not to do that.
After he asked and they told him no, he went ahead and did it anyway. You know, when you put pictures on Twitter, other people can see them. I don't know if he was aware of that. But after his bosses told him, don't do this, he went ahead and did it anyway. And so did not get fired from his job.
That's pretty remarkable.
Which is kind of remarkable to me. But he and his partner on that, a Martha Ruiz.
Yeah, and I read the LA Times this morning because, you know, that's how I roll.
You are very international.
And the Martha Ruiz character, she is co-banned because she didn't react. The stage manager said, I'm in the audience getting Matt Damon's wife out of the seat we need for Jimmy Kimmel to do the bit we're planned at the end of the show. In my earpiece, the thing that Dean wears all the time, even when he's not on TV, Dean gets all his instructions during the day through an earpiece.
And the other voices in my head.
Right. He hears Trouble on Stage. They read the wrong name. He went up, and Martha Ruiz was just standing there. And the other dude, the dude where all the trouble started.
Brian Cullinan.
Tweetin' Brian, as they call him.
Tweety.
He couldn't get either one of them out on stage when they should have been reacting like there was a fire.
Supposedly they were frozen backstage.
And he had to drag them out.
Yeah.
So that's why she's out.
Yeah, so they have been banned from anything related to the Academy Awards.
They can't even watch it.
In the future. If they even say the words Academy or Award.
Right.
Pricewaterhouse police will come and
if they have any relatives named Oscar, they've got to cut them out of their lives.
Not allowed to eat Oscar Mayer hot dogs, anything.
Done.
Nothing. They're completely out of the whole deal.
No statues. If they ever want a statue for anything, give
can't
it back.
Watch Sesame Street. No.
A statue trophy.
No Oscar the Grouch.
No, they can't, right. Can't do that.
True. Can't watch Sesame Street.
Definitely not allowed to completely coat their body in gold lamé paint.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, not a bad way to spend a weekend.
In L.A.,
all right, so we'll come back. We got more on all the important things going on in the world. Oprah about to call Dean and announce her candidacy. Alec Baldwin, new concert news. And then Dean has started an annual tradition that goes back, I think, maybe all the way to 2015, which will occur again this Sunday. And Dave Ennett will be a part of it as well. We'll talk about that.
Goes back a long way. I also have, I just got, before the list that I sent you, just got a honey of a celebrity real estate listing, as you know that.
Oh, you're real estate agent of the stars.
I am real estate agent of the stars, and I just got a honey of a property. I want to. I just like using that phrase. That's coming up from one. All I'll say, it's one of my favorite stars.
All right, excellent. Can't wait to hear this.
He says sarcastically.
For real? Okay.
Yeah.
There it is. There it
super
is.
Super sarcastically.
Uh-oh. And our friend Mary Pettinato from Honor Flight will join us in just a second as well, because they got a big event coming up, and nobody better than Mary.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh. Top man, pro and steady. Tune him in, cause he's
back to Dean Richards live at Channel 9. I say we go right to the big plug for Sunday. This tradition goes back how long?
Well, the Chicago Long.
No. A tradition of you broadcasting.
Oh, broadcasting.
Because you did it. You broadcast in the lobby even when nothing's going on there occasionally.
I just like presidential towers. It's a nice area. They have those statues of people that are out in front of the towers.
They all like the statues of people.
That always makes me feel like people are coming to watch the show, and really they're there all the time. Doesn't matter. So that's why I enjoy it. Just so happens this weekend is the American Lung Association's climb, the four towers, presidential towers, raising a ton of money. Our own WGN team will be participating, as always. Led by, am I correct on this, by Dave Ennett?
It's Ennett to Wit It. That's the name of the team.
That's it.
That's the team.
There was a sound effect that went with that.
Yeah, me too. Here's the plug that won't sound like he's reading it. Go.
It's the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare, and it is this Sunday, and you can climb any of the four towers or climb one, two, three, or all four of the presidential towers. Starts early Sunday morning. We have a big team from WGN Radio there, along with Dean broadcasting live. And you can sign up or pledge at fightforairclimb.org or call 312-781-1100.
Coming up, Dean's Real Estate. First, Oprah for president.
She was hinting in an interview that she might be interested in running for president. She had said in this interview that was on the Bloomberg Network that she never thought that she was qualified to be president, that she didn't know enough to be president.
Do we have it? Do we have the sentence? Sorry, listen.
Have you ever thought that given the popularity you have, we haven't broken the glass ceiling yet for women, that you could actually run for president and actually be elected?
I actually never thought that that was, I never considered the question even a possibility. I just thought, oh.
Right, because it's clear that you don't need government experience to be elected president of the United States, right?
I thought, oh, gee, I don't have the experience. I don't know enough. I don't know. And now I'm thinking, oh.
Yeah. All right.
So Dean, sounds to me like she's
so,
in.
So, you know, I think she may have been plugging her magazine. She kept saying, over and over. Ultimately, in the interview, she did say that will not be happening. But this kind of elusive, I just keep saying, I never thought about it until recently, mm-hmm. is not exactly saying the word no.
So, if she ran... Listen, we've seen nuttier things. We actually have. But that's a long ways off. And today we're just trying to figure out if Jeff Sessions is about to jump off a bridge in Washington. as we continue, and we'll get to the real estate, Alec Baldwin's doing a book?
Yeah, Alec Baldwin, who has famously done Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live, has decided to put it into a new satirical book that's called You Can't Spell America Without Me. Subtitled, The Really Tremendous Inside Story of My Fantastic First Year as President Donald J. Trump. Book's going to be out in November.
Perfect for Christmas.
1 year anniversary of the election. Mm-hmm. So that's the latest on that front.
And finally, a huge real estate development. Dean, are you a real estate agent of the stars?
I am. A lot of people, sometimes they see me on the street. Dean, why are you wearing that yellow blazer? They then realize that I am a licensed real estate agent, but I only deal with a celebrity big, like in my day job, I only deal with the A-listers.
Sure.
And
that's why I've never sold a house to Potash.
Turns out that my close personal friend Meg Ryan wants to sell her loft in the Soho neighborhood in New York.
Uh-huh.
And, Steve, this is a sweet, as I like to call it, it's a honey of a property. 4,100 square feet, 3 bedrooms, 3 baths, key lock elevator. There's a long entry gallery, huge windows, 7 architectural columns, 12-foot ceilings, floor-to-ceiling French doors. There's a room just to get facelifts in. A lot of people don't know.
Oh, it's a facelift suite.
That's a nice feature.
I bet the floor probably needs to be replaced. There's been a lot of work in there.
I can put you into this.
I got $15,000 right now, paying cash.
I'm asking price right now of $10.9 million.
$10.9 million. I will. Up
Did
it
I mention there's an
20,
open?
But I'm going to have to finance
an open air and airy kitchen stocked with high end appliances.
$22,500, but the last 2,500 coupons.
$10.9 million. If anyone's interested, Dean Richards, Honest Realty.
And by the way, the yellow blazer. Don't sell yourself short. That's a color for you. You look great in yellow.
A lot of times when I wear the blazer, people think I'm a yellow taxi. That's not even polite when that happens, by the way.
It's kind of mean, actually.
Yeah, it's actually kind of mean.
Kind of mean. Our friend Mary Pettinato is on the phone. Speaking of important things we need to talk about. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I am doing just fine. And good luck to everything crazy going on in your life. I know how busy you are.
Thank you.
But you've got the big Honor Flight Chicago 6th Annual Law Enforcement Hockey Classic. It's coming up Saturday, March 4th. Why, that would be this Saturday at the Edge Ice Arena. We want a huge crowd there for that. Cheer on your favorite cops and cheer on your favorite FBI agents. Those would be the ones that actually wear the blazers and the earpieces while they skate. These are great men and women, and it's great that they're coming out to have a good time and volunteer to do this. And all the money goes to Honor Flight, right?
That's right. Wayne Messmer will be singing the Star Spangled Banner. Kara Kilmer from the Chicago Fire will be making a guest appearance. Ben Eager from the Chicago Blackhawks, Stanley Cup champ, will be signing autographs. It's Mars and Wrigley have both contributed candy. It's fun for the whole family.
I'm going to bring out my new best friend, Nathan Taphorn of Northwestern Basketball. Or is he playing Saturday night?
Well, they have a game Sunday, so I don't think it.
Maybe he could come by.
Maybe he could try.
Who do you root for, though? The police or the FBI?
You root for a tie.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, you root for a tie. These guys get after it, don't they, Mary?
They really do. There's no love lost on the ice, let's put it that way.
And it's good hockey.
It's great hockey. I mean, they fly them in from all over. This is a big event.
Now, Dean, have you been to one of these?
I have not. I have only admired from afar. Not only the event itself, but all that they do with this organization.
Honor Flight's amazing. Mary, plug yourself for a second, would you?
Honor Flight Chicago flies our World War II and our Korean War vets to Washington, D.C. for one day, a day of honor, and what many of them describe as the greatest day of their life, or the second greatest day next to marrying their wife of 70 years.
Yeah, how about that? How sweet is that? And the money from Saturday is going to go to make sure that more vets can be flown to these monuments, frankly, as quickly as possible. And we need to let Mary know and her organization know where these vets are. There's not a medical situation they haven't seen. And she can talk you through any of the questions that get asked. But best thing to do is probably go on a website, I guess, right?
That's right. And most importantly, we have more vets on our waiting list now than we've ever had before. We need the funds to get them on the plane and to honor them as soon as possible. The average age of our veteran is 86.
Yeah, wow. Come on.
I was in Washington, D.C. Last year, I guess, when Honor Flight was there. So there were veterans everywhere at all the tourist places, with hats, buttons, banners. There is nothing more moving than seeing these people. And you go up and shake hands with them and thank them for their service, and you hear their stories. And you realize what amazing individuals these veterans are.
Absolutely. I remember I called a vet the day after, and I said, "How was your day?" And he said, "I wished I were a human octopus. I can't shake enough hands."
I'll bet. Seriously. I mean,
yeah,
you're at some of the most historic places in Washington, D.C., and the biggest crowds were around these groups of veterans who were just sitting down and having an ice cream cone or something, and people were stopping them like crazy to shake their hands.
Mary, there's a position in hockey warmups called the puck dummy, and in practice, you might roll out a puck dummy, throw them on the ice somewhere, and they fire pucks at them for a target practice. I'll come out and do that for these guys if you need it in pregame.
Oh, that would be great, Steve. Thank you so much. I know when you announce you're coming out to any event, we get many, many more attendees.
I'd like to octopus a few hands on Saturday as well. Saturday night, 7:30, the Edge Ice Arena in Bensenville. Join us for Honor Flight Chicago's 6th Annual Law Enforcement Hockey Classic. Tickets easy to get and information easy to get. Best place to go is honorflightchicago.org. But you got a phone number you want to throw out as well?
Yes, 773-227-8387.
227-8387. Mary, great. Get back at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where do I sign up to shoot pucks at you again?
You have to be either an FBI agent or a police member of the police department. But you could sign up, see if they maybe make you an honorary one, give you one of those fake badges they give to kids.
Ooh, I'd like that.
Yeah, and then you come out and hit me because I'm the puck dummy. You wouldn't believe how many times John McDonough's called me that, the puck dummy. Q calls me that right after he hangs up. Stan Bowman's coming up. Thank you, Dean.
See ya.
Stan Bowman, your Chicago Blackhawks. A man in charge of the math, the general manager for your Blackhawks, coming up here in just a few minutes. Hawks, of course, beat the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. And I think, Dave, one of the reasons the Penguins were a little bit flat in parts of that game was the fact that it was 63 degrees in Antarctica yesterday.
That could be.
It's a
not
tough
good
day for
the
Penguins. Yeah, really rough. Big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And now Oduya enters the zone. Should he scores? Johnny Oduya from the left circle.
winds up and hammers one right along the ice. The first shot of the game finds the back of the Predator net. Deep out of the right circle, fed the slot. Here's Oduya closing in. He scores! Johnny Oduya! Snap one from just outside the left wing circle. Now high slot. Oduya moves in. Fires! He scores! Johnny Oduya! Pumps it off the crossbar and into the back of the Red Wing net. And the Hawks retake the lead on the Red Wings 2-1.
Here's what I picture the other GMs around the league doing. They get up in the morning and go, what'd Stan do? Nothing great. What do you do today? Nothing great. What do you do? What? Oduya's going back? What do you give up for it? Apparently a cardboard box and a Coke. No, the kids, the prospects could turn out to be NHL Hall of Famers, but it just looks like another great deal for all of us who are Hawk fans. And who doesn't love having Johnny O back? Stan Bowman joins us now. You are Big Shot GM of your Big Shot Chicago Blackhawks. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am just fine. By the way, if you need any cap space with me, I'm happy to create it.
I'm sure you do your best for Hawks. So.
Tell me a little bit of what you can about how the Oduya deal came down.
Yeah, our coaching staff, obviously, and all the core players that have been here, they know Johnny as a person. They know his capabilities as a player. And chemistry-wise, you know, he was a very popular guy in the locker room, and he's very low maintenance from that perspective. So we knew it would be a great fit on all those regards. So it just came down to could we find a price that made sense to us.
Do you have like a move after you hang up the phone when one of those deals comes down? Do you give it a little fist pump? Like, you know, we know what Kaner looks like and what Taves looks like when they score. You got a little private move in the office, the Bowman?
Well, we got our new office there overlooking Madison Street, so I got to be careful.
.849, want to get Dave and Andre in here too with Stan Bowman, your Blackhawks DM. And Stan, one thing that's really fun is how great these guys are playing. I mean, they're in a groove now.
Yeah, we played our best hockey of the year the last probably 5 weeks here, which is important. You know, leading into the playoffs, you have to be on a hot streak and have your game in order. So I think it took us a bit of time early in the season to get going with our full team game. I think we had the aspects of our team that were playing well back in November, December. But we didn't seem to have everybody playing well at the same time, and I think that's what's happened recently. We really had all of our four scoring lines going, our defensemen, goaltending. You know, we've had a full team effort, and I think that's what you need as you head into the playoff.
And Stan, how much of a lift has it been? And you mentioned protecting your assets, but to see young guys like Ryan Hartman and Schmaltz lately, with that top line, I mean, really being productive and these guys contributing, you knew they would eventually, but to see them when the team is playing its best hockey, playing such important roles.
Well, it's great. I think that's the exciting part of the team is how some of these players that have played a big role in the last stretch here have all been our youngest guys, and certainly it bodes well for the future. And you know, these are guys that we have a lot of confidence and faith in their abilities, and some of them have been with us for a couple of years, like Ryan Hartman. You know, he's slowly worked his way up from Rockford, and you know, we saw a glimpse of him in the past, but this year he's here full time, and he's made a big impact on our team. And you know, I think they're only going to get better as the year goes along. And like you said, Schmaltz has been fantastic. But, you know, since he came back from Rockford in mid-January, he's been very dangerous, and you know, you saw last night the versatility. We had an injury within a game, and Nick's able to jump right into that center role. I mean, he had played center his whole career until we switched him over to wing. So now to see him move back on a short-term basis in the middle between Kane and Panarin, it's pretty unusual to have a player of that caliber just you know, come into that spot. So we're fortunate these young guys are taking that next step.
Stan, I just want to commend you guys, too, for everything you do off the ice as well. I know the Hockey is for Everyone program, which was a few weeks ago on the 18th. I was at that game. And are you still doing the reading program this year? I think at the end of March is when it ends, but it really gets students involved in reading and seeing how many books they can read, and then they win Blackhawks prizes at the end.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really important thing. I think if you take a couple steps back, I mean, we love the sport of hockey, and we certainly make our profession at it, and the players do as well. But the bigger impact you can have is, can you make a difference in the world, and can you have an impact on people that love the game and, you know, contribute in a positive way to society? And I have to commend our players for being willing to jump on board with those types of efforts. You know, we've got some great athletes. They're great people off the ice. They do everything we ask of them. And, you know, we're trying as an organization to take things to that next level and impact society in a positive way.
I've been thrown out of a lot of fine cities in 35 or so years, but this is my home. And I've never seen a team of professional athletes with all the cliches and the assumptions that people have that's more willing to go the extra mile for the community as a way of paying it forward, and it really understands their role in the community. So you're right. It's a great group of guys and a great organization, as the coach would say. Hey, before I let you go, with the expansion draft coming up, you know, we all want to play Stan Bowman. We all want to be you in some form, and these are great arguments to have and great discussions to have. Is there an easy way to understand the expansion draft and how you protect people or not?
I wouldn't say there's an easy way. It does take a little bit of studying. I think the one way to look at that, I try to put it in this perspective, which is we are going to lose one player, but one player only, and every team is in the same boat. Everyone's going to lose one player. You're not going to lose three. You're not going to lose zero. That's the way the rules go. So we're sort of all on an even playing field that way. Yeah, there's certain requirements which would probably take too long to get into here, but certain players are exempt. So the young players that haven't been in the NHL for more than 2 years, they don't even have to be exposed or protected. And then you've got a group of older players that you either have to protect them or you have to expose them. And those guys fall into one or two categories. So we're going to focus on that when we get to the end of the year. And hopefully the end of our year is you know, mid-June, and it's going to lead us right into that expansion draft. So we're going to be prepared for it, but I think the focus now is trying to have a great end of our season,
sure,
long playoff run.
Yeah, and after another great Scott Darling performance last night, he may well prove to be too expensive, but he's going to have a very good but a very tough decision to make down the road, and there'll be a conversation with him once the year's over, huh?
Yeah, well, I know Scott wants to stay in Chicago. I mean, he's been very honest and frustrated about that in the media as well, and you know, to grow up in Chicago and dream of playing for your hometown team and then to make it and to be as great as he's been. Like, he was dynamite last night again. It's unbelievable the way he's come in. And, you know, for a while there, he wasn't playing all that often, but he still gave us a great effort. So, you know, that's something we'll have to tackle that when we get to the end of the season. But, you know, we know he loves Chicago and we love everything he's done for us.
And all I can say in the end is, when it works in our favor, math is great, and when it doesn't, math sucks.
I'm on your side with that one. That's true.
Yeah. Stan, great talking to you. Thanks for all the great work.
All right. Thank you.
Stan Bowman, your general manager of your Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, you're right. What other general managers think? They must.
Maybe just go, another day where Stan didn't kill us. No, Stan killed us.
And you know what his celebration is? It's, that's a hockey trade, baby. Don't you think?
But he probably just goes into the corner because he doesn't want to make it about him.
Right.
8:56. Let's come back, get your news next on 720 WGN.
720 WGN.
Nine ten. Yeah. Live in the Allstate Showcase Studio and on CLTV, we continue. And we're going to do a couple things on the law this hour. And, of course, part of this is in tribute to the current or soon-to-be former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We'll get into that ugly story from the latest in the wacky world of President Trump and his friends. Before we do that, though, let's start with this. Kevin Davis has written in Chicago forever. He wrote Defending the Damned and the Wrong Men. His award-winning writing has been USA Today, the Tribune, and just about anybody that allows him to come in and say, Kevin, we love your work, and nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I am fascinated by this brain scan in the courtroom stuff. You know, we get bogged down, really, since OJ, of going, cameras in the courtroom, cameras not in the courtroom. But the emerging technologies that we have, obviously DNA has been the biggest story, but there are more and more ways to solve crimes, aren't there?
Yes, there are. I mean, the whole CSI phenomenon has come to reality, and forensics and DNA evidence now are just part of the fabric of the criminal justice system.
So when I talk about a brain scan, there's one famous case. Do I remember that? Was this the tabloids had a field day with this? It's in New York, right? The high-rise murder? Was that what it was called?
The high-rise horror.
The high-rise horror.
You're referring to the murder case of Herbert Weinstein, who is the central figure in my new book, The Brain Defense. Herbert Weinstein was a retired ad exec, and he lived on the Upper East Side of New York with his second wife, Barbara. And Weinstein was known throughout his life as being friendly, calm.
Even-tempered.
Even-tempered. He raised a family in New Jersey with his first wife. So what happened that January day back in 1991 was that Weinstein and Barbara got into an argument, and it got heated, and they insulted each other's children. She called his son fat, and he said her daughter was a brat, and she scratched him in the face during this argument. Now, Weinstein, who had been calm to that very moment, went for her throat. And he put his hands around her throat, and he squeezed, and he squeezed, and he squeezed until she fell limp to the floor. And he had killed her. So he panicked, and he dragged her over to the bedroom, and he opened the window, and he threw her out, and she fell down 12 floors all the way to 72nd Street.
Onto the street.
Onto the street.
Not a great way to cover up what you've done.
He thought he would make it look like a suicide. But the cops figured out pretty quickly that that's not what had happened, and Weinstein confessed after being questioned probably for about a half hour.
And we had no reason to believe there was any history of domestic violence, no reason to believe that this was something that was percolating and coming. You know that whole you never know what's going on behind closed doors thing?
None at all. You know, the neighbors, the friends, the family, they all had described Weinstein and his wife is the idyllic couple. I mean, they walked hand in hand down the streets of New York. They went to the movies. They went to restaurants. Everybody thought things were perfect with them. So that's why this was so highly unusual.
The brain scan piece of this is where it takes a very interesting turn. How does a guy with no anger in his past snap and do something so horrific?
So what happened next was he hired a very good lawyer. And his lawyer thought, you know, we ought to send Weinstein for some psych testing, maybe get an MRI, because he seemed sort of after the murder to be detached and rather emotionless, and just thought, you know, we should do this, as any good defense lawyer would do. So when they put him into the MRI scanner, what they see on the screen is stunning. There's a growth the size of an orange right over his left frontal lobe. And his lawyer knew right then and there. He said, aha, I've got a defense. I'm going to argue, I'm going to find out and prove that this brain cyst inhibited Weinstein's judgment and impulse control, and the case just took off from there.
There was enough medical backing at that point to show that behavior could be an anomaly?
You know, yes and no, and I think that's really the foundation of this case, and where the arguments in this case get contentious was the prosecutor wasn't going to buy it. You know, it's been long understood through lots of research that, yes, brain injuries do cause changes in personalities. People can become aggressive.
CTE, also, big part of that now in the NFL.
Absolutely. So there had been research along those lines. But what they hadn't done was use actual brain scans showing brain activity. His lawyer wanted to bring a PET scan into court. And a PET scan shows brain function through its use of energy. That had never been done before. And so this case really opened the doors in a lot of ways to trying to answer this question is, can a brain scan prove or be used to prove that somebody is less responsible for committing a crime?
Does it show a little? Is it kind of setting a dangerous precedent, though? Because as Steve had mentioned, you know, if there is some sort of concussion, can that be an excuse? Or cancer? I mean, can you take it to a different level, saying, "Well, I was impaired.
I had a bad cold. I was tired of post-nasal drip.
I had taken too much Coumadin." You know, does it set kind of a difficult precedent?
I think absolutely, and that's the fear, and that's why, you know, prosecutors fight these kinds of cases, because once you open the door to saying, you know, my brain made me do it, or there's an excuse because I had a tumor or I had a concussion, where do you stop? Because, you know, it's important to remember that not everybody who has a brain tumor or a cyst or a concussion, it becomes a killer.
But to be fair, and by the way, I'm not in the business of defending murders. If there is a legitimate medical reason that somebody does something horrific, that's a legitimate medical reason. So how fast is the technology developing where we can meet those two roads will meet?
I think that's still a little bit far off. But what's happening is these brain scans are being used in conjunction with traditional medical diagnoses, you know, for psychiatric, you know, illness or mental health problems. Right now, it's not being used to completely excuse or exonerate somebody. Where I see this going is more it's being used to help us better understand the mind of the criminal and maybe find a place in the justice system where they can either get treatment or help rather than simply incarceration.
With the change in the landscape around the country, and George Ryan was a big part of this, most states are saying, well, we're not going to do the death penalty anymore. Even now, and frankly, under Jeff Sessions, if he stuck around, that was going to be a push in the other direction. But if states don't have a death penalty provision, are you likely to see less of these cases push forward? Because we know you killed them. What are we fighting for here?
I think so, because these brain scans and this neuroscience evidence is used primarily now in death penalty cases. But there are some researchers who are sort of shifting the idea of how we're going to use neuroscience in the courts. And it's more towards finding, as I said earlier, a place in the system for those who have mental health issues, psychiatric problems. You know, the mentally ill are criminalized in this country and in this system. And we know here in Cook County, at the Cook County Jail, there's a disproportionate number of mentally ill people who are in the general population. So I think that could be the shifting direction in where neuroscience will be most useful in the criminal justice system.
And it's still up to the individual judge in the particular courtroom during the proceedings whether he or she wants to allow something like this, correct? It wouldn't be mandated, basically.
Right, that's correct. You know, in the Weinstein case, there was a evidentiary hearing and they got lots of experts from around the country arguing on whether we should accept this science or not. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you exactly what the outcome was at because I want you to read my book, The Brain Defense.
Good job by you.
Thank you. But there's a lot of tension, and there's still a lot of tension. You know, I think juries are wowed by pretty pictures of brains, and that was the fear in this case. You know, you look at it, it's colorful, and you see the big black hole where Weinstein's cyst was. And you got to think, wow, well, something must be wrong with this guy.
Mm-hmm. You could almost think of that could be a good defense as he's going after her and choking her. But to have the wherewithal to say, okay, I'm going to throw the body over the balcony and make it look like a suicide. You know,
that's the hurdle, right?
There's more contemplation, it seems, going on to that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what this raises is such interesting questions about how we control our impulses, because everybody works to control their impulses.
Well, let's be honest here, and I'm not speaking out of school. There's not a single person in a long-term relationship who hasn't thought for a brief fleeting second, I'd like to kill you, and the person in the relationship hasn't thought, I'd like to kill you. The difference between us and people who murder or go to jail is it's a fleeting second, and it goes away.
Absolutely, and that's a great point, Steve, which I do make in the book. And that's what was so puzzling about Weinstein, because he lived his entire life in control. And so it does make you think, you know, maybe this brain cyst did inhibit his impulse control in a way that he had never experienced before. You know, he had never experienced someone, his wife, you know, much less, scratching him in the face.
Right.
And he just lost it in an instant.
In your book, The Brain Defense, out and available everywhere?
Out available everywhere.
Get two copies. You careless, you might lose the first one. He may need it for your defense. You were going to say?
Oh, also, tonight I'll be at the Barnes & Noble at 1 East Jackson doing a book signing and reading.
And brain scans. So you come up and get the book signed, and then he... but last question before you go. In doing this, even with all the criminal justice writing you've done and every good and bad guy you've come across, what surprised you most in the research?
What surprised me was a case that I found that happened in the 1800s that was one of the first brain defenses. I had never heard about it. William Seward, who was Secretary of State under President Lincoln, actually defended a freed slave who had murdered a white family in the South, and he put on a brain defense, more or less. He had discovered that this man, William Freeman, had been hit over the head while he was in jail on a wrongful horse thievery conviction, and got 100 doctors from around the country, including people from Brigham Young Medical School, everywhere, on behalf of this freed slave.
How about that?
It was a very interesting
case. And
this
was in the 1860s?
This was mid-1800s.
How about that? The fact that you could find that many people willing to go up against the system.
Absolutely.
And defend a black man.
And it really hurt Seward's career for a while because you can imagine how unpopular it was to defend a black man in the South back then, accused of murdering a white family. But it just showed me that there was a long history in which the criminal justice systems tried to address these issues about a person's state of mind and their brain.
You know, and we all think we have the answer as soon as we see the headline or see the story or hear the story now. That's why there's juries. That's why there's judges. And that's why the process takes a while. But congratulations on the new book.
Thanks so much, Steve.
The Brain Defense. Nice to have you in studio, Kevin Davis. Hey, could you take a look at Dave's brain before you leave?
Do you have a scanner handy?
Yeah, just use mine.
I'm good.
Yeah, well, that's what they all say. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Remember, at any time, you can hear the roar. See the purple, hear the roar. When that happens, seventh caller is going to win whatever Jake and Mary tell me they won. And again, this is Nathan Taphorn Day. It was a Nathan Taphorn show. I think we're all Nathan Taphorn in one way or another, aren't we?
We can't confuse Nathan Taphorn with Dave's Buckthorn issues, though.
Hopefully Taphorn was exploding. Yeah. I'm telling you that right now. Taphorn is exploding, as well he should be. Nathan Taphorn last night threw the perfect pass that had to happen at the time it had to happen. You know, our friends and fans and people that listen to the show with regularity, we thank you so much for the support. But they get it. They totally get it. They understand. And Connie Kowal sent a text, and Connie said, this is clearly a play that Cochran wrote up when he missed the half-court shot, and they thought, we got to get something good out of him, and they finally put it into play. Is there any truth to that?
Apparently, Connie texted me the same thing, so I guess there's two sources.
Yes.
Two texts from the same person.
But congratulations to the Cats, and listen for the roar. Can we hear Dave's call one more time? Yeah.
1.7 to go in a tie game.
I guess he can't run it.
Taphorn heaves it down the floor.
Got it.
Part of the catch. Puts it up.
Yes!
Good! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Derek Parton at the buzzer for the win! And the Wildcats have beat Michigan 67-65.
Are we going to get trampled?
They're all in a pile right in front of us. Unbelievable.
Congratulations.
It was pretty crazy.
That'd be very good. Sammer just told me something in my head. I didn't hear a word of it. Can you say it on the air, or is it a secret a message that the listeners can't hear? Your message was?
I wanted to do a food drop, thank you.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I allowed a food drop, guys.
Oh, yay, Mary.
Steve Grzanich, I allowed food to come. I don't know if you know, it's Wing Fest.
Oh, this weekend, yeah.
Remember the first year of the show after, you remember, I was fired in 2010, so I left.
Right.
And then when I came back in 2013, Kevin was producing, Kevin Paul. He's a trader. Mm-hmm. The first year of the show, remember Kevin's only wish was to be at WingFest?
Yeah, he got a press pass to WingFest.
Yeah, he got a media credential.
Doesn't XRT, or didn't XRT sponsor it or something? Somehow we had to get XRT involved to let Kevin in.
Do you guys remember?
Like professional courtesy.
Wasn't he a judge or something?
Do you guys remember
no,
when
that was Rib Fest.
You know how you take, you know how you, if you're trying to get a fish out of a fish tank, there's like that scoop? He had one of those. It was like an oversized
net. They bring nets because the people around the wing things are 10 deep. So you hold a net over like a giant fishing net and they throw the wings in your net.
It was so bizarre. He had this net that he was carrying around filled with wings.
Well, the MC this year is WGN's Pat Tomasulo. There's going to be music by Cadillac Dave and the Chicago Red Hots. You can get tickets at wingfest.net. It's on Sunday, March 5th from 1 to 6 at the UIC Pavilion. Wing eating competition to see who can eat a dozen wings the fastest. Maybe Kevin would win that.
Not anymore.
It benefits Illinois Restaurant Association Education Foundation. Just because he's a retired eater doesn't mean he still couldn't eat quickly.
Yeah, no, I mean, he eats, but he looks great. He's taken the weight off and he's kept it off. He looks great. Yeah, all of Ro's show was in yesterday for a makeup session prior to their photos. Now, Ro wears makeup 24/7. But the rest of his folks were in yesterday and they were having pictures
makeup,
taken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
New staff pictures taken. And Kevin had makeup on. I told him, I've never been more proud of you. sitting here and getting your makeup on. That's tremendous.
Page out of the Dave Bennett playbook.
So we have a whole lot of wings here, just so you know, and they're down here in the green room. And if any staff member comes down and eats them down here, I'm going to rip their arms off.
Yeah.
I'm going to carry them upstairs and people can eat them up here because I don't want to clean up after wings in the green room.
Listen, we're all afraid of her. Why would anyone cross?
Don't you have any bounty with you?
Mary gets mad so nicely. You really have just
don't
a nice
person. And then she smiles.
Yeah. Don't cross her.
Don't come down. I'm going to rip your arms
off.
We'll have to get Dave a fork and a knife.
Yeah, I need a fork and a knife.
Yeah, he eats wings with a fork and a knife.
I do. God, I don't want to get all messy.
Oh, God.
Wow.
You're supposed
it's 9:31. I hope your son's not listening. We're back with the big story. Take a break for that and then come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Judge Tanya Acker. Judge Patricia DeMango. Judge Michael Corriero. Three judges, three opinions, one verdict. This is Hot Bench.
Killing it. Just crushing it. You see the numbers on Hot Bench?
Love this show.
Here's weekdays on CBS2 here in Chicago at 2 p.m. around the country as you're listening. And intergalactically, check your local listings. And Judge Patricia DeMango in studio again. Great to see you.
It's great to be back here again. Thank you for inviting me.
Nice to have you. And it's a wacky world out there that comes down to one thing. If you tell the truth, you never have to remember what you said, right?
Absolutely. Because at this point in life, I don't remember all that much, so it better be true.
You look fabulous. Are you kidding me? So let me ask you this. When you, of all the years, when somebody comes up in front of you, is your lie detector still pretty good? Not that you're not going to hear the evidence, not that you're not going to judge the case, but is your BS meter pretty good when somebody's in front of you?
I think it still is, and part of judging the case and part of making decisions is based on credibility and the credibility and the truthfulness of the witness. And so you really do need good BS radar, as you put it, in order to make those decisions and to reach those factual conclusions.
Explain how Hot Bench is different with a three-judge panel.
Well, you know, all the shows basically have one judge. They listen to the evidence. They render a verdict. The public, the viewers, never really get a look into what's going on in the minds of the bench.
Sure.
So here, with three judges, pretty much three opinions, we deliberate. We're in the deliberation room. We bounce ideas off one another. Sometimes we sway one another. Sometimes we don't. And that deliberation process, I think, is what the viewers have embraced. They just love it. Even in the legal community, when I go back to New York, even the people that I know that are lawyers, etc., they love that aspect
sure.
of it. They just love hearing what we're thinking.
Are you likely to be more lenient if somebody owns it and says, you know what, I did this, I was wrong, or are you, hey, you know what, you did it, you get the harsh penalty?
Well, if they own it, that's one less thing you have to deal with, because if they do it and you believe they've done it and they're lying, now you've got two issues that you're dealing with. So I think the best approach is to say the truth, which is if you did it, you did it. And then we can make an assessment. The most difficult thing in my mind about being a judge is making decisions that are based on facts that are accurate, because
not alternative facts,
yeah.
actual facts.
Actual facts.
Yeah.
So that really does help.
So when the three of you get in that room, you know, this Corriero guy's trouble. I just think he's there just to stir trouble up. What's going on with Corriero?
He is. He has just added a new dimension to the bench. Mm-hmm. And I believe it seems to me the public's embracing it. Our ratings have gone up. We're doing terrific.
3.5 million. Let me tell you something. In the fractured world of television, where there's 9,000 choices every second of every day, you know, you're beating Ellen, you're beating Kelly and whoever's sitting next to Kelly.
At the moment.
So, yeah, you guys are on a great run.
Yeah, we are really doing so well. It's so pleasing. It's exciting for us to know that, you know, anytime you guys know it better than anyone. Anytime you make any changes, you're always concerned how the public is going to take it. They loved the change. We're happy. We work together well. We still have that chemistry. And he adds a dimension that didn't exist before.
Yeah, he's shifty, though. I want you to watch him.
You think I should keep my eyes open?
Yeah, I think you should watch him.
See, now I think my radar must have gone off because I thought he was pretty darn good.
But he's a, you know, he's a bit of a flirt, too, you know. Yeah. So just a wink here or there. But you've seen that act, too, you know, mostly from me.
That's why I come back here.
Yeah, there you go. Judge Judy, of course, was the biggest name in this business, and she still is. But we lost an icon in TV judging just in the past week and a half or so when Judge Wapner died.
Oh, I know. How sad was that?
Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
No, I never did. Never did. I've never met the other judges. The only judge I know is Judge Shineland, Judy Shineland.
Yeah, and Judge Judy is a great story because she had no interest in television. She was going to pull it out. Kind of was a lark when she started. But you had spent your career, you know, in the law doing what you were doing. Did you ever think it would blow up like this?
I didn't. But, you know, it was interesting because when I was on the bench 19 years, and while I was there, I had the type of personality that you see. I mean, I'm no different on the show. Maybe I'm even calmer on the show than I was because I was dealing with such heavy and serious cases on the bench. And the people in the courtroom, the lawyers, the reporters, the court officers, they say, you need a show. Judge, you need a show. And, you know, I used to go, yeah, from your mouth to Judge Judy's ears, from your mouth to here. And then all of a sudden, one day, I get this call from Judge Judy, and I'm thinking, somebody must have whispered to her. But it wasn't a goal of mine. It wasn't a goal. My goal was to stay on the bench and to rise to the level that I had when I left, which was the administrative judge in Brooklyn. And then this, you know, came along, and let me tell you something.
What did Judy see? Like a
thrilling.
What did Judy see in you? Like girl from the hood? Like, you know, there's something there with her.
Do I have a little hood in me? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Girl from the block, like Jenny from the block.
Well, yeah. You know, she said when she was asking around that she phrased it, "I'm looking for someone like me, only younger." That's how she said she phrased it. So I couldn't be more flattered, and I was thrilled. I'm loving every minute of it.
Have you ever had somebody who you've ruled against come back to you at some point and say, you were right, or either I've turned my life around.
Or you were wrong. You know,
I've never had anybody say I was wrong.
Right. But someone comes to you and says, you know what?
Well, I had the nerve to say.
You ruled against me, and hey, well, you called me on it.
I'm going to tell you, yes, I have. And I had a very specific situation with a young girl who was getting involved in criminal activity. She was a prostitute. Her pimp basically would come to court with her. And, you know, you couldn't get him away. She was on drugs. And at some point, I was almost waiting for her to do something wrong so I could put her in jail and get her off the drugs and get her away from him. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, she didn't show up one day. When she came back, I remanded her, put her in, kept her in. She cleaned up. She was pregnant. We didn't know it at the time. She had the baby. I let her go. And about 9 months later, after the baby, she came back with the baby and said, "You saved my life. And my daughter was born drug-free because of you."
How important is that?
So awesome. That was
that's a career maker.
Special moment for
sure.
Me.
Yeah, without a doubt. When you go from attorney to bench, how big of a learning curve is it?
For me, it was not a very big learning curve. I had been a prosecutor for about 5.5 years, and then I clerked for some judges. So I was
so you'd
already
seen that part of the game.
I was already at that end. I was already at the bench. And very, very familiar with the procedures and how. But it's still that first decision that you make that's yours. It's very hard. No matter how many times you can have a conversation with a judge and make a recommendation to that person, ultimately they own the decision. It's theirs. But when it's yours, when you have to suppress evidence that the police have seized and it's your decision, it's very hard to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've had the honor of sitting on a couple of juries in some pretty intense cases. And I mean honor. You know, because like everybody else, you get a jury duty notice and you go, oh, am I going to get out of this? And as a public figure, you think, well, they're going to throw you out right away. Well, in both cases, they kept me and I ended up serving as foreman on each jury. And I learned so much. But it's such a fulfilling thing, stressful, but fulfilling thing to be in a room with people you've never met, spend, in this case, it was a week or so, and one case and a couple
criminal
days in the
case.
Other. Both were criminal cases. Mm-hmm. And to go through that process and the interaction with the judges, I mean, you say, look, there's a lot of TV shows, the dramas that they do out there. You're not packing this into 60 minutes. We're talking about people's lives and real outcomes. And in both cases, the judges in each case played real significant parts. We had a hung jury in one point, and the judge said, guess what? Keep working.
Yeah,
he came to a decision.
He gave you that charge that says, we call it in New York, an Allen charge, and you go back out there and you say, you know, you've got to all get together because you're 12 great minds, and if it's not you 12, it's going to be another 12, so work on it.
And we got a decision, yeah.
But how difficult, I mean, because you've had the experience now, it is extremely difficult to be objective, to step back from your own personal feelings about an issue, and to do what you think is the right thing. Because you can't let, at least from my perspective on the bench, you can't let your personal feelings about an issue cloud it.
You've been so successful, obviously. I'm sure a lot of female judges look toward you as a mentor. What would you tell is it harder now or easier for women who are lawyers who want to be judges and aspire to maybe what you've done on a lower level?
I'm going to tell you that the bench has really represented the female population. So we are pretty much consistent with the public, you know, with the numbers. So, you know, the ratio. So we do have a significant number of women. I think women, it's important for women to see other women in positions of power and success because they recognize they can get there as well. It's not an impossible task anymore. And they can come to you and say, what is it? Did you do something different or special? How does it work? So, you know, I think that whenever your numbers reflect the population demographics, it's great. And I think the bench is there now.
As the Hot Bench Show continues to grow and seemingly do all the right things to make more and more of you watch it, Justice Patricia DeMango may have a difficult case coming up because I feel that Kelly Ripa, who I like, at some point will commit a crime for a ratings boost to get on your show. Do you see that? Do you with me? Kelly may actually commit a crime to appear in front of you three.
Well, I don't know. You know, she doesn't have to do anything really criminal. She could just, you know, she could just do something sneaky.
We're changing today. It's sneaky people.
Right.
Well, it's great to have you back in Chicago. Safe travels wherever you go. And thanks for the entertainment and the education.
I love being here. I love you guys. And I love Chicago. So I'm thrilled to be here and come back.
CBS 2, 2 o'clock every day. And we're back after this on 720 WGN. Did we get a winner in the Cat Roar? Did I announce that name? Gigi. Gigi Thomas, you said? And what, we don't know what Gigi's real name is. She just went with Gigi Thomas. And what did we win?
Georgiana.
Georgiana Thomas. Okay, so how about Lou Malnati's Pizza?
No, Western Gear.
Northwestern Gear.
Oh, you got Northwestern Gear?
Oh, can you hear her?
We can't hear her.
Okay. I heard her.
Completely.
I heard her on the seventh floor.
It's good that she's not cursing. I didn't know we had this, so we locked up the Northwestern Gear. That would seem to make sense.
We did.
All right, so Northwestern Gear going to Gigi.
We got Chris Collins into a closet, locked him in, and said, you got to give us some stuff, and he did.
How about that?
Go Cats.
Yeah.
Go Cats.
Thank you. And is Coach on with us tomorrow?
Yes, he is.
7:40.
Tomorrow morning.
Be great to give him a phone five. Like, it's like a high five. We just do it over the phone.
By the way, he was out there on the court last night with Coach Fitz after the game, celebrating.
Oh, how cool is that?
Really cool.
Two great success stories.
Yeah.
Before the Bill and Wendy extravaganza comes up, I got a couple pieces of sound I want to play for you. Let's do this in reverse order. You guys remember Piers Morgan? It's cut five, Jake.
Of course.
Piers Morgan he's a bit of a fire starter. Piers Morgan had a show on CNN for a while, and then he no longer had a show on CNN.
Then he won Celebrity Apprentice.
Celebrity Apprentice, mm-hmm. Right? Celebrity, but was that after? I don't remember the timeline.
I think it was after his show.
I don't spend a lot of time worrying about Piers. I know he's on America's Got Talent. He was a judge. And he was also involved in this whole weird thing where he was writing for British newspapers and caught up in that whole phone scam where one of the papers he was writing for was tapping into the royal family's phones, for instance. How the man's not in jail is beyond me. However, he has decided in his world of start a fight wherever you can that he's all in for Trump. And he actually was on is this a British talk show this cut comes from?
Good Morning Britain. So it's essentially...
Oh, it's our competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, Good Morning Britain.
Yeah.
Here's Piers Morgan. See how this went for him.
He claimed that he wanted to bring people together, but what he's doing is dividing us even more in the most unpresidential way imaginable. He's striking fear, just like Hitler did in Germany. He's saying, these are the people with the problems. These are the people who are doing the bad things to us. And these are the people that we need to blame.
Eric, let me jump in.
Yes, Piers.
Here is where...
And I know, Piers, you drink his bath water, so you think everything Trump does is great.
Let me just confirm, I do not drink Donald Trump's bath water. Well, I'm sure it tastes delicious.
I'm not sure.
Come here, seriously? Seriously? That's your defense? Continuing on, we told you Oprah is going to run for president. You heard that clip. That's a bit dramatic, I suppose, since Gail, her buddy, tweeted out this morning, that ain't going to happen. So Gail has spoken.
Apparently Oprah didn't discuss it with Gail before.
Right, which is nothing but trouble. But let's switch back to the topic of the morning outside of Northwestern, and that's Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions has denied he communicated with the Russians, and his confirmation hearing back then is going to make it very difficult for him to get out of it. Listen.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
The man who the NSA, CIA, and FBI have unofficially named the biggest Russian spy in America is the ambassador that Jeff Sessions met with in Cleveland and then separately in his office. It is the same man who was meeting with Michael Flynn or talking to Michael Flynn, and Michael Flynn called him on those couple days after Christmas over and over again, but it had nothing to do other than holiday wishes. Obviously, it eventually cost Michael Flynn the NSA job. The general had to step down from that. What will this do for Jeff Sessions? You said earlier that they're asked now that Jason Chaffetz is sure the house is on fire, he has joined others to ask for Sessions' recusal.
For Sessions' recusal, yeah. And you
and Chuck Schumer is on board as well.
Yeah, and McCarthy is too, and McCain, of course, too, but in the Senate. You think that Trump will ask for and receive Sessions' resignation?
Yeah, and I think it could happen by the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham and John McCain did a town hall last night on CNN. John McCain was one of the first people to say we need a special prosecutor for this. Senator Durbin was on this show demanding the same so that the American people could hear and understand what exactly was going on. Here is Lindsey Graham on what Jeff Sessions needs to do. And keep in mind, this is last night.
Don't worry about John and Lindsey Graham and others looking into Russia, because Russia's not our friend. Trump, President Trump, I want to help as much as I can because he's got a mess on his hands. He seems to get Iran right. He seems to get ISIL right. This nut job in North Korea, he understands the threat. When it comes to Russia, he has a blind spot. The bottom line is that Putin's disrupting democracy everywhere. I want to know what happened between the Trump campaign, the Clinton campaign, and the Russians. Because today is the Russians, tomorrow it could be the Iranians. And to my Republican friends, we should have no joy in our heart that the Russian efforts hurt Hillary Clinton, even though they didn't change the outcome. I promise you, we could be next when it comes to the Iranians and to the Chinese. So if there is something there and it goes up the chain of investigation, it is clear to me that Jeff Sessions, who is my dear friend, cannot make this decision about Trump. So there may be nothing there, but if there's something there,
and finally,
the FBI believes is criminal in nature, then for sure you need a special prosecutor.
And finally, more than anything else, if I didn't steal anything out of your purse when you were out of the room, I ought to be the first to stand up and say, I want a complete investigation to prove that I didn't steal anything out of your purse.
And I'm going to go look at my purse now.
Where's President Trump? Why wouldn't you say, it wasn't me, and I want to prove that it wasn't me, so that we can get this question off the table? And we got nothing but crickets. It's a minute before 10, and Bill and Wendy are next.